I'm Casper Zogovins at Dogman. I'm listening to Sixth Sense Podcast.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the 50th episode of the Sixth Sense Podcast. Tim, milestone, baby.
It's a big one.
It's a big one.
I can't be more ecstatic about being in here to do the 50th podcast today.
Yeah, it's my favorite time of year, right? You have your NHL training camps going on. Baseball postseason's lingering in the near future.
Yep.
Football started. You love your soccer.
It's going right now.
But Ottawa, they have their camp going on. They have their preseason going on. Possibly the last time we'll see some of these young kids before they get dispatched to Sweden, Junior, Binghamton. Could be a while before we see some of these bright, shiny diamonds that we have that are supposed to have some positive repercussions down the road. But this year's kind of like the, how would you describe it? It's like a J.P. Ricciardi era year for the Blue Jays before, you know, you start seeing some of the prospects come through the system.
I've been referring to it as Corey Lockfest 2011 this preseason. It's been great seeing Corey Locke back in the lineup.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. But no, it's been interesting to see all these young kids play, to be able to, you know, take what we've read all summer long on paper about these kids' skill set and see it applied on ice against quality competition. You and I have talked before at length about how we were kind of, you know, not quite up in the air about Jared Callum, but just really wanted to see guys like him play against man competition, right? Like how they're going to do in the real NHL environment. And it's just been great watching these kids and trying to evaluate them. Some of the games have been absolute duds, almost unwatchable. I am kind of sad that I've stuck it through some of these games, especially that Boston game.
That was something else. I agree completely with what you had to say regarding Cowan. He's a kid who had a number of superlatives describe him in the offseason. Like, this guy's a man who played against great competition in Binghamton, won a Calder Cup, was a captain in Spokane. He's ready. And then you're like, all right, well, get on with it. Let's see if he's actually ready. So there was kind of like that buildup in a camp, right? Run by being another player, Zibanejad being another.
Yeah,
you're expecting big things from these kids right away because they've played against higher levels of competition. Have you been underwhelmed so far with what you've seen? Or
it's tough to say, right? Like when you see some of these kids like Hoffman lining up with Lessard, how are you supposed to get a good look at him? Yeah, sure. You know, you're going to see his independent skill set. But at the same time,
don't duck the question, man. Get right to Runblad and Zibanejad. Come on. What are you thinking?
Runblad has gotten better game in, game out since the beginning of preseason. I thought he looked a little soft, disoriented, pensive, I guess, in his first few games, but he's gotten much stronger. The Montreal game last night, we'll get into this in a minute, I thought the whole defensive core played exceptional, and David Runblad was certainly part of that. But he's gotten stronger. He's been making some brilliant rushes from the blue line in. He just manages at times to really slow the game down to his own pace. And I think that's really indicative of the quality player that we have in David Runblad. Mika, I'm as big a fan as this guy as anyone. His games have been really hit or miss. I haven't really seen the game-to-game progression I would have liked to have seen. Last night against Montreal, the second game on Saturday, when he was suited up as a winger, really wasn't too impressed with him. He looked really disoriented on the ice. His motor, I think, has made up for some of his shortcomings, but seeing him handle the puck last night, and, you know, he was caught on the off wing numerous times, and I just don't think that his speed and his physicality was enough to overcome the fact that he just didn't quite look ready. He looks great for an 18-year-old. He looks fantastic. I mean, compared to, like, Pajot or Prince, or some of these other kids we've seen play at the forward position, he's certainly been head and shoulders like the best 18-year-old on the ice, correct?
Yeah, but I mean, listening to the pundits speak, he is in competition with probably Peter Egan, DaCosta, for one of those center spots, right? And yeah, last night, as you mentioned, he's being played on the wing. And do you think as the preseason gets stronger and stronger in terms of like the opposition lineups on a game-to-game basis, like, he hasn't stood out. Like, there was a game-winning goal against Boston in overtime, but like, to that point, I thought in that game he had a couple rushes.
Yep.
But to that point, he wasn't the noticeable Mika Zibanejad. Like,
he didn't look like a number six overall pick.
No, right. No, that's not what I'm saying. I just don't think he did enough to separate himself to justify bringing him over and burn a year off his entry-level contract just to get him in the lineup right away. And
yeah, and we don't have to look much further back than, I forget which Murray said it, that he doesn't have to be the second best center in camp. He just has to be
amongst the top nine forwards, yeah.
Yeah, and that's it. And has he been? I don't think so.
Yeah, no, that's... It's a fair point. It's a fair criticism of his game right now.
I mean, in terms of potential, yes, he probably is amongst our top nine forwards with the highest potential, for sure. Is he ready for it this year? I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt for now and see how he plays out through the rest of the preseason. I really hope the Senators continue to give him games. I would love to see them give him the nine-game tryout in the regular season just to see if he can acclimatize. I mean, there's so much going on with these kids. Like, just, you know, forget the hockey stuff. Just, you know, the off-ice stuff alone is enough to drive you crazy. Imagine coming into all this, and then you got to deal with the hockey on top of it. I'd like to see him get acclimatized, you know, another month or so, and see where we're at with him and make a decision then.
So you would give him the nine games?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't see any reason why not to. I'd like to see him play with some skilled players. Not that he hasn't been, but I'd like to see him play with some NHL regulars.
Has he deserved it yet? Like, that's the thing. You look at Ottawa's roster, and you look at their top six, and you're like, are those good players to play with to assert yourself right away in the lineup? Like, Mahalik's actually looked all right.
Does Colby Rasmus deserve to hit four? I mean, maybe not, but that's where the potential's going to be for him to flourish, right?
Yeah, I suppose, but I mean, it's a bum year anyway, so why would you...
Yep, absolutely.
Mind you, if he's only playing in nine games and you send him back, it's a moot point regardless, but...
Or the question is he going to be better at game, say, 42 than he will be at game one? If the answer is yes, and it's a considerable difference, then you have to keep him. If you think that he's going to continue to grow and progress as a player, then I think you have to keep him.
Yeah, but
if he's learning and doing the right things on the ice.
See, I disagree with that because I think any of those rookies would be better at game 42. I think most people would adapt. Like, look at Steven Stamkos' first year, right? He, like, that's another kid who stank it up for the first part, was good in the second half, and then flourished in the second year. So I think if you gave him that opportunity, he probably would flourish because he has played at a high level before. But if he does, like, if he can't separate himself in that first year that much, is it worth it? I don't know. Like, he hasn't proven everything that he can do over in Sweden. Like, he hasn't even played in an under 20 World Juniors yet.
Well, would you say he's been better than DaCosta at this point? I would say no. I think that they've been about even. DaCosta has not overwhelmed me with his skill. People were going nuts about his chemistry with Mahalik over the past two games because of two passes.
Yeah, see, I haven't watched the last two games, so I can't even comment on that.
Yeah, see, and that's, like, you know, no offense to you or anything like that, but DaCosta just looks... If we're going to write Zibanejad off for scoring that overtime goal and making that beauty deke against the Boston defender, then you can kind of nix DaCosta's two brilliant passes to Mahalik and whatever chemistry he may have found. He looks to be about the same kind of neutral player on the ice that Zibanejad has been. I mean, they haven't really hurt the team at all, but they maybe don't look like NHL players right now. I think Regan has this one in the bag.
The only criticism I had of DaCosta's game early on in the preseason was that his play was too individualistic. Like, you could tell, like, the skill set's there, but he wasn't utilizing his teammates to the best of his ability to generate offensive chances.
Yeah.
Like, he was just doing it on his own. Like, you see him stick kind of through the neutral zone, and then as soon as you get to the blue line, Pocheck off a stick, and puck's going back the other way. And that's just something that will come with time, better line mates, chemistry. And if he's developing that with Mahalik, great. But I haven't seen the last two games, so I can't even comment fairly on that.
It was really nice to see some emotion from the guy last night. I don't know about you, but I've kind of gotten the vibe in, like, in the four games he played at the tail end of last year and at the few preseason games, including the rookie camp. There's kind of a lack of emotion in the guy. Like, he was just so, you know, just like a statue kind of on the ice. And he took a penalty last night and was slamming his stick. You know, he's certainly got a good grasp of the English swear words now because you can see him mouthing them from the penalty box cam. And that impressed me.
But again, here's a kid who's what, 23 or something? 22, 23?
Yeah.
So he's not a young duck, right? Like, he is, but he isn't relative to, like, what some of these other prospects in Ottawa are, right?
He's got 5 years on some of them.
Yeah, because he went to college, undrafted free agent. So he's a kid who's a little bit further along. And really, you could look at a number of Ottawa's other forwards, like Condra, Greening, Zach Smith. Not young. Well, they are young, but they're not young. And
Zach Smith's fairly young.
Yeah. I think,
well,
he's like,
came
22,
out
23.
He came out of the WHL. Played what?
Yeah, but he was drafted as an overager.
You're in bingo? Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
But he's been here for what, like, three seasons?
Yep. Yeah, so this is year number three for him.
Yeah, so I think he's 24.
Sure.
Anyways. Yeah, young guys. But they don't have much more to prove at a lower level, right? Like, they at some point, they have to separate themselves and demonstrate that they're actually NHL regular players. And I think DaCosta is kind of close to that threshold where he has to, like, demonstrate that he can play.
And last night, they were playing Zach Smith with Colin Greening and Condra. And although they weren't maybe the most dominant line on the ice, they certainly were effective. They look like NHL players. They look like NHL caliber players on the ice. They know what they're doing. They're smart. They're big with the puck.
They're all third line players.
They're all third line players. Well, I
pencil
mean,
them in for 20, boys. Pencil them in for 20.
Jeez.
Expectations, though, right? Like, we've talked about this off air a lot, over the phone, in person, over beers, whatever. And even in her comments on the blogs, like the other day I posted something. It was actually from Hockey Prospectus' 2011-12 annual that projected Ottawa to have the lowest goal scoring totals in the league. And we've talked ad nauseum about this and said, yeah, like with the amount of top six talent that Ottawa has, goal scoring could be a problem, especially if one of Alfredson or Spezza gets hurt. There's a lot of risk-reward going on with Ottawa's top six. And one commenter on one of our recent blogs was talking about our projections. And their problem was, for all the things that went wrong last year in Ottawa, how can you project less goals from the squad this year?
Yeah. There's a lot of question marks this year too, though, right? A lot of question marks. I mean, there's a lot of guys who have...
I'm not penciling Alfredson in for like 60 to 70 games. Like, I wouldn't have confidence in that.
Oh, I would... I don't.
And Spezza typically plays, what, 65? 60, 68 games a season?
Depends on the back.
Yeah?
Depends on the back.
And Filatov's no...
That's the one I wanted to get to.
Yeah? Even Bobby Butler.
Yeah. He could be in for the sophomore slump.
Well, if he's not on one of the top two lines, he's not going to get... It's just not going to happen for him.
And we've talked about this, too. Butler, when he's not burying the puck, he's a pretty useless player.
Well, Tim Murray said that in one of his interviews, right? He's just one of those players who finds the back of the net, puts himself in shooting lanes, gets himself in a position to shoot, score goals, and he's got a knack for that. But yeah, that's his game. He's one of those guys that you watch play for 60 minutes and you say, what the hell did he do? And you look at the goal scoring sheet and he'll have an assist or a goal. It's kind of like Healy, right? Healy was that kind of player as well. He'd be an interesting trade fodder, I think, if he actually had a productive season. Because I don't know if that's the kind of player you'd hold on to.
What was this contract you signed? Is it another 2 years?
I feel like it's $1 million a season kind of thing.
Yeah, 2 years, right?
Yeah.
Average? Yeah. Okay. I wouldn't do it this season, that's for sure. Maybe next year when you start having some more young guys push for spots, some of the draft picks coming up.
Well, it depends on the return, obviously.
And it's possible Butler just becomes a victim of not enough roster spaces anymore.
Yeah, if you want a roster of complete players, yeah. I'm starting to turn into like one of those guys from the sun who criticizes Spezza's game because he doesn't play enough defense. Why doesn't he hit?
Or play enough games,
period. Why doesn't Bobby Butler hit people, Tim?
There's not enough body checking on the Senators right now. That's for sure.
I wanted to ask you, because it's been a couple weeks since we've actually been in here. Probably actually 2 months, at least, I'd say. Our boys, our man crushers, the Sixth Sense man crushers, Brian Lee and Peter Regan, have actually stood out in the preseason.
Yeah. We look good right now.
We look good right now. And then you realize, oh, yeah, they're not really playing against that great a competition. But I've been, it's a good showing for those two. They came into camp with not a lot of job certainty. Even Brian Lee right now, I think most people would agree, is in heated competition for a 5th, 6th, 7th defenseman spot.
Which is strange because he's coming off, the tail end of last year, his last 20 games or so after he got back into the lineup with Clouston. He was one of the Senators' best defensemen, in my opinion. Like, I really enjoyed watching Brian Lee play. I thought he was very consistent. Seems to have changed his game a little bit, learned how to use his body a little more, adjusted to the play. He knows how to read the plays a bit better. I think that's really helped him. And he's looked, well, I wouldn't say perfect with Phillips or anything, but he's been good. I think that there's no reason at all that we should not be considering Brian Lee for a full-time roster spot this year. Top six.
I liked how you tied in the Ottawa Sun headline, Brian Lee. Chris Phillips, perfect pairing.
Perfect's a relative term, Graham.
Oh, God. Terrible. Just terrible. I've been impressed with him, though.
Yeah.
I just find it, if you listen to the Ottawa media, the traditional media, so to speak, if you read or listen to those guys regularly, you'll find that Matt Carkner, pencil him in. He's already in. Like, how can you trade that guy? He fights.
Yep.
That guy hasn't played since, like, February 26th of last season. You haven't seen him play. He didn't play when Ottawa was on a hot streak last season. He has some fantastic sabermetric numbers. Like, you have the Hockey Prospects annual as well. you've seen that his puck possession skills are great.
I was shocked. That might have been one of the most shocking things I read.
It is a bit weird. You're like, because you watch that guy play regularly, and you're like, well, he's strong positionally, but he's not the most fleet of foot.
He's here for one reason.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah.
But I was surprised. He's a good PK guy. I guess he's like a poor man's Annie Sutton. But possibly even better. Like, he doesn't hit people with the same kind of ferocity as Annie Sutton.
It's a different sort of intimidation, I guess.
Yeah.
And I that's the other thing I don't get. I don't want to get too much into there really at all, but I'm going to.
Well, this is job competition stuff. This is fun.
Well, what's the deal with having friggin' Neil, Karkner, Kanopka, Smith all on the roster? Like, there's no more goons left in the Eastern Conference. We've got them all. Like, who are these guys supposed to fight now? Like, it's ridiculous to me that you need so much toughness. Like, if goal scoring is going to be at such a premium, why is Kanopka going to be in the lineup?
Why do you want to be shorthanded all the time? Is that what you're worried about?
Yeah, so that way Jesse Winchester can have a job so we can kill penalties? Like, is that what's going to happen here? I don't get it. I don't get that at all. That's beyond me. Like, talk about, you know, putting the best possible product on the ice, and then you've got Kanopka lacing them up for face-offs.
But one of the popular sentiments for that would be, well, if you're going to field or dress so many young roster players, you need some toughness so they're not worried out there on the ice. And I was reading Twitter the other day, and there was a hilarious comment by, I think it was like a Rangers blog directed towards a Philly blog. And it said, Jody Shelley is on the ice to protect others from other Jody Shelley-like players.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
And you don't see that too often anymore. Like,
goons nowadays have to be able to skate.
Do you think they intimidate people anymore, though? See, this is, like, now branching into, like, the whole fighting philosophy mechanism for a coaching staff to, like...
Of course they intimidate. You're going to be aware of those guys when they're on the ice, right? Especially if you're the other team's enforcer. We've read enough this summer.
But they're not even hockey players. They're prize fighters.
Yeah, I know. And the only people who seem to be really legitimately concerned about them being on the ice are the guys who are going to take the hit that instigates a prize fight, or the other guy who has to fight them in this stage fight, right? Like, you know, when you read all these stories.
Well, the only way I could understand that is if something happens on the ice where a guy like a Chris Neal, who's like, quote unquote, a middleweight, would have to go and like, fight above his weight class kind of thing, where he would have to like risk his health just because this guy did something egregiously offensive on the ice.
Yeah. And even, I know you didn't watch last night, but Chris Neal last night was running around like an animal. It was out of control, and Montreal had no one to counter his behavior. Like, they couldn't stop it. And some of the runs he were taking were just unbelievable. Like, very, you know, it was like the Drury hit, just... He had his sights set on a target and wanted to make it happen. And Montreal couldn't do anything about it. And it changed the play of the game. It changed the whole nature of it. And unfortunately, in that situation for Montreal, they probably wish they had someone who could at least take the guy off the ice for 5 minutes or put him in his place. So that's when I see something like that being effective. But as for, you know, Chris Neal lining up against, Perros or whatever off the draw and just fighting, I mean, that's useless. But last night, it could have been useful.
But Neal can play, right?
He can play. He certainly did last night, too.
So he has utility aside.
He's a three-tool goon.
He's a three-tool goon. There we go. Fantastic. So, looking at the rest of the camp, has there been anyone else who impresses you? I know you're huge on Mark Parrish.
Oh, Mark Parrish. Back from the Highliner days, I've been a huge fan of Parrish. No, Borowiecki. Am I getting that?
Borowiecki?
Borowiecki? Yeah. Borocop.
There you go.
Borocop. Fantastic. NHL ready.
Oh, so you've bought into this whole local boy, he's from Canada, he hits people, he's...
I could care if the kid was from Smith Falls. I guess he did play his junior in Smith Falls, actually. Sorry, bad example. Renfrew. He's been fantastic. He's solid. I was looking at I was showing you the atrocity that was the stat counter from last night where he registered 4 hits in the game or whatever it was. I thought the guy had more like 20 or 30. It seemed like every single play he was just taking the body. He's looked fantastic, makes smart decisions. You know, he's able to prevent goals. He looks great. He's ready. Get him a roster spot as soon as possible. Definitely.
He's put Pat Weirkotch down on the depth chart.
Absolutely. He's moved someone down. Maybe he's even made a guy like Karkner expendable down the road.
Do you buy into that, though?
What?
Like,
the depth chart.
Like this whole preseason.
How fluid
everyone
it
just,
is.
Everyone just talks about, like, why isn't Pat Weirkotch ready yet? What's wrong with Pat Weirkotch?
He came from the NCAA. He's a young defenseman.
Oh, God.
This is his. He only played 1 year pro last year. What more do you want from him? He looks okay. He's not a. You can't call the guy a bust yet. We've been spoiled by Erik Karlsson. Everyone automatically assumes that these teenagers are going to step in on the blue line.
No, you need the linear progression, right, in their development. Everybody has to develop at the same pace.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't, you know, if he doesn't progress at the same rate as like an Erik Karlsson or a David Rundblad, oh, get rid of him. He's useless.
Yeah, and we don't need to take into account different styles of play or playing background, what league you came from, what coaches you had. Brutal. I'm not ready to write off Patty at all.
But Borowiecki played the playoffs. What's wrong with Patrick Łukasz?
He did play big minutes in the playoffs. I watched all those bingo games.
Yeah, but
he was
plays
good.
He plays a style that's conducive to playing well in the playoffs, right? Yeah, it's the physical. He plays doesn't make a lot of like egregious mistakes out on the ice, whereas like Patrick Łukasz is a puck mover who can skate.
Chris Phillips has made a career out of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And yeah, so in playoff time, you want the guy who doesn't make the most mistakes.
Yep. And sometimes people like that who make the least mistakes get to the NHL faster. Unfortunately, that just happens. And
Shane Knighty. The Sheriff.
Shoot. He reminds me of a young Jason Smith.
Really?
Yeah. I think he's future captain material. He you and I know
Jason Smith was a hell of a center just player.
Oh.
You set the bar so high.
Gator was fierce.
Oh, he was good. Like back in the Edmonton days, I suppose.
He was fine. Leave it at that. But we know what comes along with winning the hardest worker in training camp, right? If we look back over the years at the rookie development
camp, yeah.
Rookie camp, Borowiecki won it. Chris Neils won it.
Did Lehner win it 1 year?
Mike Fisher. I'm not sure. Anyways, it almost assures you a fast track to the NHL after you win that award. We've heard management talk about him. They've pumped his tires in a big way. The fans love him because he's local. Obviously, the Team 1200 couldn't be any happier to have a Kanata boy on the team. He'll probably start, of course, he will start the year in bingo, but I'm very interested to see him get a chance at some point this season with injuries.
While we're sticking with the blue line, who gets moved first? Like, we've talked about veteran bags of crap.
How do you move the veteran bags of crap, though? How do you move them? We just signed Phillips for 3 years. He ruined our whole blue line scheme.
Could you believe that Panzeri column that like lumps Phillips in with those two? Like Kuba and Gonchar? It's just like, you don't re-sign Chris Phillips. Problem would have been solved.
Everything is happy. We're all joyous.
But how do you even lump Chris Phillips in with those two? Like, how do you bracket him in after they just re-signed him?
I don't know, because he's old?
Yeah, I suppose.
Short-sighted, I guess?
I don't know.
Like, Gonchar, maybe a good
I think
chance.
Gonchar, based off the way he's played in the preseason, he's a good candidate for a trade. Like, I think you could actually salvage that guy's market.
Oh, I was going to
say. Philip Kuba, I didn't watch him last night, but I saw the Twitter thread, and a lot of people were criticizing his play, so I'm like, great, here we go.
Yeah, Kuba didn't have a particularly strong game on Friday night.
I thought he looked fine early in the preseason, but, like, I don't know. You don't like
him.
We've
been over this. You're wrong.
I know. I'm just fucking way too optimistic.
Like, his play smells like rugby bag. It's just horrible. Like, I don't mean a freaking carry-all luggage either.
But he's not fancy. There's never, ever been a fast of that guy's game that's fancy. It's just like, yeah, somehow he gets 40 points at the end of the season.
Pavel could be in a light.
Yeah, but like that's another guy who, you know, he could endear himself to a Toronto market, and then he eventually gets dealt, right?
Is he still in the NHL, Kabina?
Tampa, maybe? Yeah, I think he might be with Tampa again.
Ouch. Anyways, Gonchar, I think, might have the most trade value on the entire roster going to the trade deadline this year.
I think McCullough could have a lot of trade value at some point.
Puck moving defenseman, power play specialist. You don't think some playoff bound team is going to require that at some point? I think he's our best hope for another first.
Maybe if Steve Yzerman trades for him, it'll be like the best move ever because Steve Yzerman did it.
Oh, it'll be brilliant. It'll be an Anthopoulos move.
Oh, yeah. He's a genius.
Yep.
Genius.
Hordes of talent.
Oh, fantastic.
Yep. He's a brilliant, brilliant man. My shrine to Yzerman is going really well in my front yard, eh?
Oh, is it? What is it?
It's just a bunch of Pepsi cans I've crushed up. It's going to look like the Stanley Cup.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I think last year...
They're Grolsch cans. And I threw them.
I don't even like that beer. That's terrible.
The bottles are fun with the little flip cap.
Oh, see, like, I bought one of those mini kegs. Oh, it was disgusting.
There's your first mistake.
It was disgusting.
The stuff tastes like aluminum.
Yep.
It was horrible.
Gross. Yeah, it was pretty gross. It was cheap.
Yeah.
But it was gross. I paid for it in the end.
It's like the generic liquor from the SAQ.
I was about to go on an Yzerman tangent where it's like, if he was going to win it, last year would have been the year to do it because he's not saddled with Steven Stamkos' like $7 million contract. But
yeah.
Whatever. Let's switch gears to the 20th anniversary. Senators marketing. Let's do this.
All right.
You ready for it?
Where are we going to start?
Let's go with the leaked jersey.
Disappointing that it was leaked. Even more disappointing.
No, you're not.
No, for the Senators, it's disappointing.
Oh,
for me,
for sure.
It's fine, right? I was planning on going to the puck drop event on the 1st, and you know, it would have been nice to see the jersey unveiled for the first time there. But I'm not complaining. I wanted to see it. Wanted to see it for months. We kind of got an idea through that Reebok sketch too, right?
Here's a question for you. If you have a jersey coming out, and you know there's distribution...
Networks.
They will ship the jersey wherever it needs to be for a certain date. And then, you know, it's supposed to sit in storage for a while. And then you have a release date that, like, comes after that. Aren't you already a little bit nervous? Like, why wouldn't you just put it out there? Are you going to Puck Drop now?
Yeah, of course. I pre-ordered the jersey. I'm going.
Okay.
Yep, I'm going. But my question here is...
But you still get to see it in person.
Yeah, I will. And that's going to be great. Get to see all the true colors. No crappy cell phone pictures. It'll be nice. But look at the Winnipeg Jets philosophy. When that original logo was rumored to be leaked, the Jets reacted immediately and launched their online press conference to reveal it, to kind of take some of the thunder back, right?
Yeah, they brought the jerseys out of a plan.
No, I'm talking about the original logo.
Oh.
Remember that when they rushed that out? That was good. That was good damage control, I thought, by the Jets.
How did you like the Senators' damage control? We got the press release.
I like the article that Gary Ochs penned where...
Jeff Kyle said, someone he fucked up.
Someone blanked.
Yeah.
You know, and someone obviously did blank.
I just filled
it
in, so whatever.
Yeah.
You can say it, Tim. You could swear on this podcast.
Messed up.
You've been known to do it before.
Messed up.
Don't
screwed
be shy.
Up.
Don't be shy.
Fucked up.
There you go.
Shit up.
Way to go.
Yeah.
Just let loose. It's been a while.
Yeah. We'll get into it more when we start talking about how Buffalo managed to release those.
Yes. So Buffalo did manage to release it.
I'm amazed someone in Buffalo had a cell phone. And like we were discussing, how are these things not under lock and key in Buffalo?
It was probably someone from Hamilton.
Who's got the money? Yeah, who's going from Hamilton to Buffalo to buy a Senators jersey? Why is that even on the shelves there?
They're display Senators fans there. Maybe. I don't know. I got nothing.
No,
it's inexcusable, actually.
People don't go from Ottawa to Buffalo. People from Buffalo move to St. Catharines and open up Greasy Spoons near Wax Museums.
Do you think Senators fans, do you think they actually sold one of those jerseys yet?
Oh, I'm sure people's kids in the organization have them. Sure.
No, like, I mean, from the store itself in Buffalo, from their actual store. Do you think they are actually on the rack and on sale?
I don't think we'll ever know. Well, it was clearly on the rack in that photo. It was right next to all the new Leafs jerseys and everything as well.
Yeah, but like that could be in the storage, obviously.
Yeah.
But do you think they actually sold one?
I haven't seen a photo of one yet. And you'd think that if someone
bought it, yeah,
they would be very quick to milk it for all it was worth, right? For their 15 minutes of fame. Regardless, I love the jersey. I think it's brilliant. Huge fan of the Francophone and Anglophone patches on the sleeves. I don't see any problem with that. The people who are up in arms about the French content on the jerseys need to realize where they live.
Here's a question for you. If you're taking a picture of this jersey, why would you mail it to like aesthetics or to someone else, right?
Because
what do you get out of that?
I don't know. Well, clearly nothing, because it was anonymous, right? No one knows who did it.
Still,
we don't know if it came from a store clerk or if it came from a customer or what, right?
I don't know. It's silly.
Yeah, ridiculous.
It's almost as silly as the person from the Sen store who wrote on Nikita Filatov's form spring. Hey, Nikita, would you please come into the Sen store and sign a few jerseys for me, please? Did you see that?
No.
Hilarious.
That's awesome. What happened to the kid?
I don't know. Filatov said, yeah, I'll come in, no problem. Hilarious.
You know what? I don't see any problem with that.
Yeah.
Why not, right?
I don't know.
I mean, it's a minimum wage job.
It seems unprofessional.
It's
almost like a step removed from the Yankees fan who went into the Red Sox dugout and got Eric Bedard to sign those paternity papers.
It's an unwritten benefit. unwritten benefit of working
in the
Sen store.
He goes into the locker room wearing a Yankees shirt. Fantastic. Well done.
Should have been a slower clap.
Well done.
Speaking of the clap, back to Buffalo. Had you been in that scenario?
No.
Would you not have maxed your credit card out buying all of them and brought them back to Ottawa to sell?
I don't know.
I would have definitely purchased one for myself on the fly.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And shown up to the puck drop event wearing it.
Imagine, yeah, you actually had like a couple people who showed up to that event wearing them.
I feel like you need an entourage if you're going to do that kind of thing with like some music playing. No, like a big entrance, maybe some gold.
No.
No?
Not feeling that.
I have a completely different image of this entrance in my mind than you do.
You've actually thought this out.
Clearly.
You probably orchestrated it.
I wish. I haven't been to Buffalo in a good 5 years. It's been a good 5 years.
Poor Senators. Anyway, I felt bad for the marketing department, though. Like, that's an organization that went to lengths to kind of set up and build up this whole reveal, right, on October 1st at Puck Drop.
Yeah,
and it just to have it fall through at a divisional rival's official store, that's a kick in the balls.
Yeah, and it's even more rough because it sounds like they have this really great story to tell about the design with what's his name, Jacob Barnett. Is that it?
Jacob Barrett,
who did
help
the original.
Design it, yeah, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's based on that concept, right? And it sounds like he's going to be a focal piece to the sales pitch for this jersey. And, you know, that's, you know, still cool. But
do you think this is going to, like, inspire a number of other people to, like, start designing Senators jerseys and submit it to the organization themselves?
Sure.
Like a bunch of, like, 8-year-old kids are going to, like, crayon some stuff together. And
had you seen the Toronto Star drawings? They had all the kids' drawings of the new Blue Jays
fantastic.
Jerseys.
Fantastic. That's what we need in Ottawa.
I think I just thought of a blog post.
Did you see the Rainbow Sense? Oh, that would be fantastic too.
Do you remember that Maddox, the greatest page in the universe, where he ripped the kids' drawings, the kids' art?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the hairy fire truck.
Hilarious.
Beautiful. Anyways, if it does, why not? I think it's good to have fan interaction. I mean, they've obviously gone...
They're going to longer lengths to do it, right?
I was on...
We've seen that this week, like this summer, right? Like I was invited to the... You were too, but I just neglected to ask you to come.
You're a great friend.
But yeah, we went to that... Well, I went to that 20th anniversary launch at the Senseplex, and supposedly it might happen again in the future where we'll be invited to go, but...
See, I couldn't believe... Like, one thing I'm really just blown away by is just this, you know, revelation of the awareness of social media and its impact. Like, last night, I went onto Facebook, you know, maybe 10 minutes after the game, and sure enough, there's quotes from Paul McClain and Chris Neal right afterwards. I mean, no video, just the quotes.
Just upload it straight to you, and you can listen to it.
Yeah. Amazing. Like, mm-hmm. right there for me. That mm-hmm. would have never happened in years past.
Yep.
It's awesome. It's good. I think it's great for the team. It's really, really, really good to get those young generation fans.
Well, you get to know these players who you in years past, you'd never have some kind of access to. Not like actual in-person access, but at least you can get to know these players on somewhat of a personal level.
I saw a tweet by Zibanejad on his Twitter, and it said...
I'm in Ottawa.
Yeah.
His are always short and to the point.
It was more than 15 characters, but he said to this kid, hope your broken arm's doing better. Gets well soon, buddy. So I'm like, who is this guy? It must be one of his buddies from the SEL or something like that. Let's see who it is. No, just some kid from Ottawa, like just a little kid who mentioned him before, said hi to him, and then mentioned he had a broken arm. And then he said in his reply to Mika, like, an Ottawa Senator just mentioned me. This is the greatest.
Yeah.
And that's important.
Well, that's all it takes, though.
That kid's
especially
a fan
with young
for
fans,
life.
Yeah.
He's a fan for life now because of that one comment.
Yeah. It's kind of like how you love Mike Peluso, like, 20 years after the fact.
Absolutely. That stuff sticks with you, and it's important. It's really, really important, like, developing that connection, right? And I'm not sure. Ottawa's just the perfect size city for that, too, right? One sport town. You're going to get to know the players a little bit, like, you know.
You'll inadvertently bump into them somewhere.
Yeah, you can show up at Turpin and go play some road hockey with Mike Fisher and Chris Neal.
Yeah.
Yep.
You'll see, like, Troy Millett, like, buying windshield wipers at, like, Canadian Tire or something. Yeah. Highlight of your day.
Brad Marsh dropping some wings off to you. Filling up your Pepsi.
He was a nice guy, though. Like, that guy would go to lengths to, like, make you happy whenever you went into his restaurant. It was fantastic.
Absolutely. Yep.
And it's nice to see people stick in the community, too, right?
And you know what else has been great about that 20th anniversary is that photo mosaic thing. Even though some people have completely missed the point of that.
Yeah, I saw it. Like, one guy had, like, a picture of his cricket team up there. Some cricket team up there. It's like, come on.
Argentinian rules football
but
team.
Who's filtering out those pictures?
It's got to be going through someone. Someone's got to be approving them. Like, you could just as easily upload something really inappropriate otherwise, right?
Well, if you're, like, a Leafs fan, you could upload, like, a picture of you at the Sens game wearing a Leafs sweater to a Pittsburgh-Ottawa playoff game.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Which we've seen before.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, it's true.
It's embarrassing.
It is. But that's kind of cool.
I like the media gallery.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's
I hope they upload more. It's still the bare minimum. It's for like, what it is right now. But, so I like a picture of my parents sitting in the corner when McKechnie was scoring on, I think, like, Tebow or something at one of those games. And that was one of the few times I've ever seen my dad at a game not yelling at Andreas Dackel.
I went to the first game at the Bell Center in Montreal when it opened up. And I remember Justin Tebow made a save. And one guy in the section was so quiet. One guy in the nosebleed stood up and yelled, "Say Tebow!" Top of his lungs. And this whole section just erupted. I'll always remember Justin Tebow for that.
Brutal.
And nothing else.
Brutal.
20th anniversary, so far so good. It's going to make up for a pretty, interesting year on the ice.
Well, we've seen some criticisms of that online, right?
that it's just a sideshow.
Is this the proper year just to distract you from our team being shitty?
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, for fans who've been there since day one, like, not that I'm putting us on a pedestal because we were kids, you know, at the time that we were able to go to games in the first season, enjoy it, grew up with all those players or whatever. That doesn't make us better fans or whatever. But it's nostalgic. Like, I want to go back. There's an event at the Civic Center or something where you get to see the first year players. That's fantastic. It's like talking to Darcy Lohan on the podcast. It's great just to reminisce and just share memories and like remember how shitty those teams were. But it was like a lovable team. It was like cheering for the Cleveland Indians at the beginning of the season in Major League, right? It's like just a cast of the outcasts and you want to, I don't know, you don't cherish them, but it's just those memories are fantastic.
Yeah. I really like the all that, like the media gallery, just like an old yearbook, flipping back through it, seeing all the mock turtlenecks and the Black Sens jerseys.
Fantastic. I miss those jerseys, by the way. That's the disappointing part. I think if you're looking at this year as a whole, I kind of wish that Ottawa would bring back former incarnations of their jersey, because I think their modern one sucks. Are you disappointed with that? Because we haven't really broached this topic before.
Hugely disappointed with it. I've been very outspoken about this in the past, as have you. The current Senators' home and away jerseys are the worst in the NHL.
Yeah, I don't know if they are, but like
for home and a road or for home and road jerseys, they are the worst. I can't think of anything worse. I would even prefer the Ducks.
Ooh,
the colors are fine. The logo is just atrocious.
No stripes or anything either.
Oh, it's terrible. It looks like some sort of spinning sign you'd see at a movie theater kiosk.
Yeah,
advertising a new Avatar.
I'm trying
movie.
To think of what's worse. Like Nashville's upgraded.
Yeah.
I didn't like the old Kings jerseys with like the crest, like the coat of arms.
It's still fine. It's inoffensive. It's just neutral. I mean, they're not great, but they're not, you know.
I hate Dallas's.
Like you don't want to throw up on them, right?
Dallas's are crap.
Like that's the only Senators jersey I do not own.
Florida. Florida's terrible. I like the colors though.
The new ones have a little bit of retro appeal to me. I'm kind of into those. They remind me of Beezer.
Throwing rats on the ice.
Who had a bigger head? Tim Thomas or Ben Beesbrook?
Oh, Tim Thomas for sure.
Oh, are you kidding
me? Oh, no, it's not even close, dude. Oh. You're just thinking of that old, like, golf ball style mask that Van Beesbrick wore.
I'd like to see DaCosta in a hockey, in a goalie mask.
He has a massive lid. It's a big bucket.
Do you remember?
It has to fit that forehead in it, though. Oh. But that's the best part about DaCosta's helmet is that, like, it still sits on top of his head and it's never pulled down tight.
I remember going to junior games in the 90s, and you'd see all the like Lance Galbraith and those boys, and they'd prop their visors up over top of their forehead, I guess, to be tough or something.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty cool. I still think it's pretty cool. But, you know, at least they were doing it because it was a style as opposed to, you know, the functionality of it or the fact that your cranium. do you remember? And Heatley's mask, it's like a welder's mask. That's what DaCosta needs to cover to cover his face. Jeez, that thing's just not cutting it. So when we're looking for the 20th anniversary here, you know, it's going to be a celebration off the ice and in the stands and on the buses and in the streets.
And after goals.
And after goals. Last year, Francois, you, and myself sat down and laid out our expectations for the Senators. I actually said that they would make it to the Eastern Conference Finals after a lackluster playoff that would see them. Yeah, I know. I drank the hugest Kool-Aid. I thought we could pull a Montreal and get in and go far. Obviously, quite different.
Last year, I thought the East was wide open, though. Like, after you know, you get past the first couple teams, and then from there on in, I thought it was pretty wide open. But this year, I think the East is pretty competitive. A couple of teams caught up. Like, I didn't expect the New York Rangers to be as good as they were. A number of their young forwards kind of made the jump to the next level. Yep. Guys like Ryan Callahan.
Yeah, what a stud he is. I think it's good.
Dubinsky even played well.
Yep.
And
yep.
I wasn't particularly high on him either.
And then they added Brad Richards.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a good team. That's a good team.
So my first question for you, will the Senators finish at, below, or above 500? Last year we were 8 games under.
I wouldn't be surprised to see them finish with like 73 to 83 points.
Okay, so good enough to put them in the bottom 10.
Yeah.
Again, I think that's fair.
I think like 12th to 14th in the East. I don't think they'll be the worst team in hockey. I think they could be better than teams like Dallas, Phoenix,
Edmonton.
Yeah. Yeah.
Florida.
Unless like the kids in Edmonton take a huge
New York Islanders.
Huge leap. I think the Islanders are better than we are.
Yeah.
They have Nabokov.
I want to see how their team looks after training camp. That'll be interesting.
Yep.
Yeah. See where those young kids are at. So you're not penciling them in for the playoffs?
No, absolutely not.
So you're going to give us another a top 10 pick.
I'm trying to be realistic with myself this year.
Yeah, I'm trying to as well, and that's why my heart really says we're going to finish in the bottom three in the league. Although I wouldn't be surprised if this team was a bit more of a, you know, an upstart than people are giving them credit for. There is a little bit of veteran talent. If even half of the question marks we have become exclamation marks.
So you're not like Don Brennan. You're not throwing around the word playoffs.
Oh, that's a dirty word. I won't say that word on the show. I'll say fuck, but I won't say playoffs. No, it's not going to happen this year, I don't think. I think that's completely out of the realm of possibilities. If it does happen,
but
then...
But Craig Anderson could get us into the playoffs.
If Craig Anderson can get us into the playoffs, then he can take us all the way through and ride us to the Holy Grail. But that's not going to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But
it's scary. You know what I'm kind of worried about? Chris Phillips.
Explain. I see you have a few reams of paper here in front of you.
No, not at all. I have a notebook. It's more than a few papers.
Why don't you explain to us the reasons that...
Well, last year I was on board with the extension at any point. It was kind of like, you have this guy between a rock and a hard place. He wants to come back. You don't need to bring him back. You have all the leverage. He's coming off a horrible season. Just sign him to a one-year deal. Maybe give him like an option, a team option, and go from there. If he wants to stay, like he'll stay. And if not, why are we rewarding this guy with a three-year contract? Doesn't make any sense.
Veteran presence.
I'm actually worried that this could be like the Wade Redden contract. That like we'll look back in retrospect and be like, yeah, that was a bad idea.
Stability.
Or even like the Philip Kuba contract, right? It's the same thing. Like 3 years ago, we were having this conversation at the trade deadline where it's like, why did we just re-sign Philip Kuba?
Community.
Easily replaceable defenseman. Why do we have to lock this guy up?
We have a history together. We can't break up with him now.
You know what you can do with your leadership and community building?
Run for office?
Find someone else to do it. It's not that hard.
Build a house and leave us alone.
Oh, man. Anyways.
These are the things that keep me awake at night when I think about how he was the number one overall pick.
That keeps you awake at night?
Among other things.
I think that was probably just the worst draft in NHL history. Anyways, so we've been talking about this 20th anniversary for long enough. You want to bring on our guest to talk a little goaltending?
Absolutely, and I'm really excited about this because goaltending is just like...
Oh, it's very subjective, right? At least in the minds of many.
I know nothing about goaltenders except for what I've learned in Slapshot. Freaks. That's it.
Yeah.
They're like catchers, right? Can you think of other catchers? Who are the freaks on the football team? The kickers, I guess?
Yeah. Just people who've been stigmatized. Don't talk to them on game days. They're different cats. Yeah. Anyways, so when we get back from break, we'll be on the line with Justin Golden from the Goalie Guild. Should be a good interview. He had some, well, he had about two seasons to analyze and look over Craig Anderson's body of work. So, yeah, he's probably the right person to talk to about Ottawa's goaltending situation right now.
Well, Brian Murray's been watching him since he was in Florida.
Oh, yeah, that's why we didn't bring him in like 5 years ago.
Slow clap.
Anyways, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Sixth Sense podcast. We are currently joined by Justin Goldman from the Goalie Guild. Justin, how are you today?
Oh, I'm doing well, man. Getting ready for my first Avs preseason game later tonight against the Stars. So it's a good day to be in Colorado right now.
Just off topic, just right away, how's Gabriel Landeskog looking?
He looks really good. I mean, he is a complete player. He's being gritty. He's being really aggressive. He's not afraid to hit people. During training camp, you know, he tried to go through a couple of big-time defensemen, and these guys weren't having any of it. So, you know, he's still getting used to the size of some of the players in the NHL, but I think he has a very, very good shot to make the team, and I think most people know that Kitchener kind of released his rights. So I think he's pretty much set to make this Avalanche team out of preseason.
So it's safe to say right now in Colorado there's not a whole lot of buyer's regret drafting him second overall, is there?
No, I mean, this team's still in rebuild mode. They had such a good first half of the season last year, and then everything just fell apart after Craig Anderson got hurt a few times, and the team, for whatever reason, didn't really gel as a group on the ice or really off the ice either, I don't think. And it was just one of those forgettable second halves, and I think now everyone's kind of ready to get back on the horse here and win some hockey games.
Yeah, I think we're a couple years away from that ourselves, but we definitely get the vibe. So let's get right into this. Graham and myself, we're not huge goaltending guys. We find it very difficult to decipher these beasts. One thing I really wanted to ask you, goaltending, is it an art or a science?
It's a combination of both. The art part of the position is just the way that these goaltenders stop the puck is unreal. I mean, at this level in the NHL, it's so graceful to watch. It's so great to see the way that they read and react to plays. And when you have some goaltenders like Timmy Thomas that just go out there and don't really worry about what they look like and just focus on stopping the puck, it really is graceful, and it's one of the main reasons why I love, you know, doing what I do. And as far as the science part of it, I mean, that's a huge part of goaltending. It's all about positioning. It's all about angles. It's all about a goaltender's biometrics and biomechanics. And, you know, what type of style do they play compared to the type of body and the type of frame that they have? And one of the things that I love to watch for is how a goaltender, you know, plays a certain style that fits them really well. And that's where you look at guys like Tim Thomas. Well, he plays a style that works perfectly for his body, and that's really the science of goaltending, I'd say.
It's one thing I really wanted to ask you, and that was kind of a loaded question. I've been infatuated with your periodic table of goaltending. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
This was such a fun project for me to do over the summer. I mean, I honestly don't have much to do. I mean, I get away from the game. I don't skate at all during the summer because I don't want to get burnt out on what I do. But I had to find some way to keep myself busy. And I love infographics. I think what makes infographics so great is that you can process so much information by just looking at an image. And it's a great way, especially for goaltending, to kind of explain what I'm seeing and how I break down a goaltender. So, you know, the first thing I put on that periodic table right there at the top and at the bottom as well is, you know, this is just how I see the position. Everyone sees goaltenders a different way. And, you know, I do all this content. I write all these scouting reports. And maybe not a lot of people really understand some of the terms that I use or some of the elements that I explain in a scouting report. So this was a really cool way for me to kind of bring the educational aspect and the infographic aspect together and just create this really cool periodic table that lists, you know, 108 of the most visible or the most important elements that go into a goaltender when they're actually playing a game. There's a ton more than just 108. Like, there's an infinite number of elements that go into a goaltender's game. But, you know, this was just a really easy way for me to explain the most obvious ones out there.
Justin, I've always kind of been interested in the goaltending position. I kind of equate it to drafting quarterbacks in the NFL. Not every goalie that you draft pans out, and even a number that are taken high in the drafts have a tendency to flame out. Why do teams have such a hard time evaluating goaltenders at the age of 18, and why do they have such a difficult time projecting them to be good pros?
I think the best way to explain that is by saying it this way. Goaltending is 90% mental, and unless you're a psychologist or unless you're that actual goaltender, you don't have any clue about how they're developing mentally and how they're maturing as an athlete and as a human being. So when you're only going off of how they perform on the ice against junior hockey players or collegiate hockey players or some hockey players overseas, you don't really have any idea how that's going to equate to them playing at the pro level. And every goalie matures differently. Every goalie goes through different situations, and you can never compare one goalie to the other when it comes to the mental side of the position. you can look at two goalies and say, yeah, they have similar frames, they play similar styles, but that's only, you know, a small percentage of what makes up the overall quote-unquote goaltender. So a big reason why I think it's so tough to draft a goaltender with any type of accuracy or with any type of understanding about how they're truly going to mature is just that fact. I mean, you're not inside these guys' heads. You don't know what they've really gone through when they're growing up as a goalie. You don't know what they're going to go through in their first three or four seasons in the organization. And you also have to have an extremely good goalie coach and good development system. And I think a lot of NHL teams are just now, over the last year and a half, 2 years, starting to realize that you need two goalie coaches in your system, and you need to make sure that you put these guys in a position where they're going to be successful and they're going to be able to gain confidence and really mature, like I said, as an athlete and as a human being.
It's interesting that you bring up the mental aspect. Looking at Ottawa's situation right now, we have a young goaltender in the system, Robin Lehner, and it seems he's a young kid who has some cockiness and some swagger to him. Do you think it's the right approach for a goaltender's development to kind of maybe not remove some of that swagger, but at least tone it down a little bit?
I think a goaltender always needs to temper their emotions. I think what makes a great goaltender is a goalie that's even-keeled. And you never want to see a goaltender get too high when they're playing really well. And you never want to see a goaltender get too low and mope around when they're not playing well. So I think the biggest thing is, again, you know, knowing when to show a little enthusiasm and a little fierceness, and knowing when, you know, if you're losing some hockey games, to kind of step it up and you know, be confident, but don't overwhelm yourself and don't make things worse for yourself by, you know, pushing people around or trying to be too cocky. I thought Robin Lehner did a great job last season. It's not easy to play 1 year of juniors, come in and play at the professional level, get called up to the NHL, be thrust into these big games for the Ottawa Senators and thrive. And I just think the way that he handled himself, as far as, you know, he still showed that he was going to be a confident guy. You weren't going to push him around. I thought everything that he did in an Ottawa Senators uniform last night was great. I mean, you want to see that bravado. You want to see that energy and that fierceness, like I said. Does he still need to work on managing some of his emotions? Absolutely. But look at how old he is and look at how far he's come in just a couple of seasons. And even though I was really kind of worried for a couple of months there that Ottawa was kind of overexposing him and, you know, putting him into way too many difficult situations in Ottawa, they sent him back down to Binghamton just in time for the playoffs, and it absolutely paid off, as you guys know. Went on and won the Calder Trophy, and I think was the MVP of the series or the whole playoffs, I'm not sure. But
yeah, he was.
It all ended up working out really well for him, and you know, that's why he's ranked in the top five on my top 150 prospects rankings.
Yeah, Robin's such an ambitious athlete, and right now we're seeing these kind of two forces at play in Ottawa, where management seems to think that he would be better suited to play in the AHL in the upcoming season because they want him to get the games, to put miles under his belt, whereas Robin has suggested in the paper that he might learn more in the NHL, and he said that he learned so much last year just being on the ice, taking shots from NHL caliber players in practice and what have you. What do you think is appropriate for Robin Lehner based on what you've seen? Do you think he could play and thrive in the NHL, or will this stunt his development?
It can work both ways, and there's so many different elements that come into play. I don't like to speculate too much. I mean, I just look at what the situation is right now, and Ottawa brought in Alex Alb, which was a good move, I think. And again, a lot of NHL teams do not want to overexpose their young, talented goaltenders unless they absolutely have to, whether it's an injury concern or they have salary cap issues. And I agree with Lehner. I mean, he knows what he's capable of doing, and he knows what he thinks is best for himself. But again, Ottawa has no reason to overexpose him at this point. There's no reason why he can't play 50 games in the AHL this season and try and, you know, win back-to-back championships and then get that NHL experience in one more year. There's no rush. There's no reason to kind of push the envelope with Lehner. Everyone knows what he's capable of doing. He's an excellent, excellent Swedish goaltender. And I just think that he has so much potential and he's still so young as a teenager. You know, you might as well just give him another year in the AHL. Let him develop that starter mentality. Let him understand that even though you have success in the playoffs one year, it doesn't necessarily mean you're always going to have success. And, you know, it's going to be a transition for him and an adjustment for him this season because other teams in the AHL know what he's about. They know what he's capable of doing. They've done the scouting reports on him. And it's not going to be a cakewalk through the AHL this year. And he may feel like he can play in the NHL and learn from Anderson and, you know, soak up all that knowledge on the bench. But I think he still needs to figure out through experience that when you have success one year, it's not always guaranteed the next year. And you have to find a way to push through all those quote-unquote sophomore jinxes that come up. And so I think the AHL is the best thing for him this season.
You brought up Craig Anderson. Obviously, Ottawa signed him to a four-year extension in the offseason. At the time of the trade last season, I know I looked at your website a number of times to get your analysis and thoughts on Craig Anderson. And I recall one of the things that you mentioned that you had a concern for was that perhaps like a lack of focus became an issue last season in Colorado. On a rebuilding team armed with a four-year contract extension, do you think focus will play a huge part of Craig Anderson's season this year?
I think focus plays a huge part in every goaltender, regardless of their situation. It's extremely tough to keep that high level of focus and intensity for 82 games. And I do have a lot to say about Craig Anderson because I watched him every game here. And I think when things got tough, when the going gets tough here in Colorado, it's really hard to stay focused. It's not an easy team to play behind. The defense the last couple of seasons has been brutal as far as chemistry is concerned. And so I do think that Craig Anderson, I don't want to say he gave up on the team, but I just think he didn't try nearly as hard as he did the season before or in the first half of the season. And, of course, injuries play a role in that, and I'm not going to sit here and try and speculate about Craig Anderson's mindset. That's not something I like to do. But it was very visible to me watching him in the second half that he didn't really care as much as he did in the first half. And my concern for this season would be I know he's going to play amazing when the team is doing well and everyone's getting along and things are going great, but what happens if he loses three or four games in a row? Or what happens if he doesn't necessarily gel with his defensemen as well as he'd like to? Or what happens if the new head coach down there decides to give Alex Auld a couple of starts? That's where I start to get a little bit concerned about Craig Anderson, and I think that's merited considering what all of the Avalanche fans saw here last season. But is he capable of having the type of season he had 2 years ago? Absolutely. I mean, he's such a fierce guy, and there's so very few fierce goaltenders in the NHL. The only other one I can really think of is Ray Emery. And when you have that type of body size and you have that type of net coverage and you have that type of aggressiveness, you know, it bleeds, it radiates outwards, and it makes the team, defensemen and forwards and everyone on the bench, play that much harder in front of you. So I absolutely love the type of goaltender Craig Anderson is on the ice, but I just kind of worry about what happens when things start to go south a little bit and he loses a couple of games. And if he does lose that focus, you know, he showed it last season in Colorado that he can struggle and he will give up a bunch of goals.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear because obviously Ottawa may have somewhat of a suspect defense this year and probably won't be a particularly average team by any stretch of the imagination, which is why he's it's even more concerning that we recently heard Anderson would like to play in around 70 games this year. Is that too many?
I think that's way too many. I don't think any goaltender in the NHL should be playing 70 games. All you have to do is look at, you know, team or league stats over the last couple of years for goalies. You know, Craig Anderson played 71 or 72 games that year in Colorado 2 seasons ago, and he was burnt out against the Sharks. I mean, he just didn't have any gas in the tank. And you saw that with John Quick 2 seasons ago. He played 70-plus games, burnt out against Vancouver in the first round of the playoffs. Carey Price last season played 70-something games, I think, and he burnt out in the playoffs against Boston. And Cam Ward, he played 72 games, I think, last season, still couldn't put Carolina in the playoffs. And, you know, he did play really consistently all season long, but it's so tough to count on your goaltender in the final 15 games of the season when it really matters most and expect them to be super focused, super timely, you know, super precise with all aspects of their game when they've played so many over the course of a season. And, you know, I explain this to a lot of people. I really think the NHL and head coaches and general managers need to start evaluating their goaltending tandem and the workload, because there's no reason why you can't play your backup a little bit more in the first half of the season, so that when your starting goaltender really needs to step up and really needs to play with focus and intensity, he can do it in the second half because he's not worn out from playing, you know, 30 out of the first 40 games in the first half. So you need two goaltenders. You need them both to play games, and you need to find ways to get that starting goalie some rest so that he can play at the top of his game when it comes time for that big playoff push.
Yeah, it sounds a little vaguely familiar to the philosophy employed with baseball catchers, and makes me wonder why the NHL hasn't caught on to that quite yet.
From your last response, Justin, is it fair to say that you would prefer like a 1A, 1B situation as opposed to, say, maybe a workhorse like a Martin Brodeur who plays, you know, 65, 70 games per season? Would you rather have the luxury of a better backup?
I think it depends, obviously, on the goaltenders that you have. You know, take, for example, Calgary. You know, Mika Kiprusoff is so flexible and he's so experienced. I mean, he can play 70 games if he wants to and play at a high level. But even saying that, you know, Henrik Karlsson's a really good goaltender, and if you are going to sign him to this 2-year deal and give him the opportunity to develop, we'll get him into some darn hockey games and give him an opportunity to win some games and be a valued part of the team. You know, even if you have a Cam Ward or a Ryan Miller or whatever, you know, you can't just give them starts just because they are who they are. I think what makes a 1A, 1B situation so awesome is healthy competition, and no starts are just given to you. You have to earn every single minute that you get in the crease. And you look at a situation like Los Angeles. Well, Quick and Bernier, I mean, you want to know why Quick continues to fly under the radar and be such an awesome goalie. He feels that pressure mentally from Bernier. He knows that if he has one or two bad games, Bernier is going to step in and probably shine and probably start to take away some of that quote-unquote starter role from Quick. So I think the 1A, 1B situation is the best situation you can possibly have for an NHL team. It makes both goalies work harder in practice, and it just does so much better for the team as a whole when it comes time to, you know, being ready to go for the playoff push.
That's actually an interesting parallel, because the next question I was going to follow up with is Robin Lehner likes to do. His famous quote was, "I want to go hunting. I look at Craig Anderson and see that as a guy whose job I want to take." Anderson was given the 4-year deal. Does that seem too long?
I think 4 years for Anderson is way too long. Again, you have to look at the goaltender. I would never sign Craig Anderson for more than 2 years. I think, again, it goes back to his whole situation with the propensity to lose focus when things aren't going well. And you never want a goaltender to get complacent. And sometimes when you give goaltenders big, long contracts with a ton of money, they get complacent and they just don't put forth the effort because they don't feel that pressure to perform at their highest level, knowing they need to fight for another contract. So if I was a GM, I would never sign a goaltender for more than 2 years, no matter how good they were, because I always want them fighting for that next contract. I always want them constantly proving themselves to me again and again and again. So 4 years, I think, was maybe 2 years too long. The price, I mean, I don't really care about the price. I mean, yeah, Craig Anderson's an underrated goaltender. He's durable in the sense that you can toss 40 shots at him and he'll still find a way to stop all of them. But when you have a guy like Robin Lehner who probably only needs one more year in the AHL, that to me is why it's 2 years too long. And, you know, I talked earlier about Lehner not needing to be overexposed, and NHL teams really don't like overexposing their young talent in goal. But to keep him in the AHL for 3 more years or even 2 more years might be pushing it. And, again, you talk about how Craig Anderson wants to play every game. Robin Lehner wants to play every game. Something's not going to fit right with that equation, you know. You can't have two guys that are super fierce wanting to play every single game. It's just not a good situation to have, I don't think. I mean, they're both talented goaltenders. They both are great. They both have good, bright futures ahead of them. But, you know, how are they going to mesh together as a potential tandem in 1 or 2 more seasons? And where do Ottawa's, you know, interests lie as far as the future is concerned? Well, you have to think it's in Robin Lehner. And so if they have to find a way to get Lehner more games, but Craig Anderson wants to play every game, you know what I'm saying? It's just...
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be really interesting to see how they kind of handle Lehner's path over the next 2 seasons.
Yeah, the 4-year deal to me seems a bit like they were overcompensating for the LeClaire era, and I'm sure you knew this one was coming, and I've been dying to ask someone about it. what happened to Pascal LeClaire?
Okay, so...
Deep breath.
Pascal LeClaire is an extremely gifted goaltender as far as reflexes and flexibility and reading and reacting and making these really awesome, you know, flashy glove saves. The problem with him is that he plays a style that is not suited for the type of injuries that he's had. And when you tear a meniscus and you screw up your ankle and you do all these really frustrating things to your legs and your, you know, like I said, you tear your meniscus, which is brutal for a goaltender. You have to change the way you play. You can't continue to rely on your reflexes and your flexibility all the time because you're just going to make yourself more injury prone. And so that's the problem I see with LeClaire, is that he had all these really bad injuries, but he still came out in Ottawa and played that really reflex-based butterfly style where he puts himself in these situations where, you know, he overslides and he overmoves and overcompensates on angles, and then he'll give up a rebound and then have to make that quick jerk back to the opposite side. And that's not an economical or a conservative way to play. And if you've had these type of injuries where you've torn meniscuses and done these things to your ankle, you can't play that way. You're just going to put yourself in even more of a tough predicament. And so that's what I see with LeClaire, is he hasn't made that adjustment with his style or mentally to hold himself back a little bit and play a more conservative style and realize that he has to find a way to rely more on positioning than reflexes if he's going to be a durable goaltender in the NHL. And I feel really bad for him. I think he's such a great talent and he seems like he works really hard, but you know, these are unfortunate circumstances that happen to a lot of goalies, and you have to find a way to get above it and kind of look at things from a wide perspective and say, okay, you know, I'm really successful playing this way, but am I going to make myself better overall? Am I going to make myself a more durable goaltender? Or do I need to spend a couple of months working with my goalie coach, refining the way that I try and stop pucks so that I can be more durable and I can, you know, play more over the course of a season and stay healthy? And, you know, I'll finish with this point. I know that he's trying to get back into the NHL, but he's taking the time now to get himself 100% healthy and get himself back into, you know, being a goaltender that can stop pucks at the NHL level. So it'll be really interesting to see if he gets an opportunity, and if he does, how does he play when he gets out on the ice again? Is he still going to be crazy, acrobatic, super reaction-based goalie, or is he actually going to rely on his positioning more and play more economical? And that'll be the true testament to see how he kind of bounces back from this whole ordeal he's going under.
Yeah, if he bounces back is the key thing to keep an eye on, because I think last I heard he was at 80% and he failed an NHL medical. So
yeah, it's gone from anger to comedy to sadness pretty quickly, hasn't it?
Hopefully he saved his money.
Yeah.
Justin, at the end of all of our interviews, we typically do like a quick hits segment. Do you mind just sticking around for just a couple like one answer questions?
Yeah, sure. No problem.
Awesome. First question for you. Give me an adjective to describe Ilya Bryzgalov's contract.
Ludicrous.
What is your favorite goalie mask all time?
Favorite goalie mask of all time is Gillies Gratton. Gratuny the Loony, that was his nickname.
Cool. I'm looking it up.
I'll have to look it up. Best Philly goaltender over the past 10 years?
Best Philly goaltender over the past 10 years? Oh, that is a tough one.
That's a long list.
Would you guys laugh at me if I said Roman Čechmánek, knowing I was just being sarcastic? I guess that's a yes. I honestly really liked what Brian Boucher did in his time with Philly. I thought he was a little underrated, so I'll say Brian Boucher.
All right, Justin, my last question for you. I'm doing a fantasy hockey draft tonight. I'm going to draft the two dark horse goalies that you give me right now. Who are they?
Devin Dubnyk would be the first one, and the second dark horse would be Matthew Guerin. He's going to play a lot more this season, and he's playing behind a really good team. So Dubnyk and Matthew Guerin.
Give me an over-under on games played for Craig Anderson this season.
Let's say over, I'll say under 52.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Justin. We really appreciated your time. You're an absolutely fantastic interview. That was great.
What do you have coming up on the Goalie Guild in the next couple days?
Oh, man, there's so much coming up. So tomorrow I'm actually releasing my top 10 one-year fantasy goalies. I did that list last season, so I'll have that out tomorrow. On Tuesday, my first piece for NHL.com for the new season will be up. It's another fantasy piece. I'll list five of my dark horses. You just heard two of them, so there's a little sneak peek for you. And then, let's see, I guess after that, it's pretty much just getting geared up for the regular season. I'll continue to watch these preseason games on NHL Network. And, again, you can catch me all season long on Twitter at The Goalie Guild. A lot of people think I'm way too busy to answer their questions and stuff, but that's exactly why I'm here. That's exactly what an independent goalie scout does, so don't be afraid to reach out, and thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, thanks for coming on the show. Anytime you want to come back, just give us an email.
Okay, but if Craig Anderson, if the wheels fall off on his season, don't come complaining to me, all right?
Well, we have Lehner, though, right?
For you guys, so.
Lehner's the white knight, right? So.
Oh, he's a fantastic goaltender. I love his edginess, and I think you guys have a real shining star right there in Lehner.
All right, Justin, thanks for coming on the show.
All right, no problem. You guys have a good day.
Yeah, take care. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.